in it for the outside. All the planes have been grounded. Ain't the fire inside? Let's all go stand around it.
Funny, I've been there, and you've been here. We ain't had no time to drink that beer.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sandman Podcast. We are coming to you from beautiful Havertown, Pennsylvania. I am joined today, as always, by our resident hack checker, Oliver Fullington, our producer and co-host, El Hilo del Hack, Tyler Fullington, and the hardcore icon himself, the man whose stories got stories, the Sandman. Hack, how's it going today?
Yeah, I like that. My stories have stories.
They kind of do.
They do. You know what I mean? Yeah, there's multiple layers to a lot of these. I just hit the high points.
Yeah, well, that's what we're here for. We're here to punch them up a little bit. I'm sure, over the years, you may have forgotten some of the details, but that's what...
that's why we got a hack checker
for. That's what we have the resident hack checker, Oliver Fullington, here for. Hack, I know that, guys, we got March Madness here coming up. We got the men's and women's tournaments. Unfortunately, we only have one Philadelphia team in both of the tournaments. Let's go, Lady Dragons. And also, yesterday was the amazing Players' Championship. I know everybody here, we were all watching that. Hack,
Wow.
What a final day.
The last couple hours was great. Great with like five guys that are like minus 16. Cut three minus 16, 117, 120. You know what I mean? Dude, what a great finish. I'd love to hear the numbers on it yesterday. But, I mean, golf still needs their Tiger Woods. But that helped a lot yesterday, being that tight that late.
Yeah, it was one of the better tournaments I've seen from the PGA in some time. That was obviously a stacked leaderboard. Everything was super tight. I know that you said you saw something with Barry Wyndham Clark on 17, Hack.
Yeah, dude, he put his ball down, talked to his caddy, looked back over, put his club on top of the ball, then picked the ball up, looked at it, put it back down again, and then addressed it and hit it. I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, that was weird.
But I didn't hear anything about it. I would think if other people caught it like I do, they're all over social media right away with it.
Yeah, I was seeing a couple things on Twitter, and my buddy Steve was flagging a couple things that he was doing in terms of his play that were just a little weird. Like, he had his caddy lining up some of his putts for him.
Have you ever seen that? Dude, it's a little bit of Patrick Reed in there. You know what I mean? Patrick Reed's been accused of a lot of shady stuff, like moving some sand back on his backswing. You know what I mean?
We might have to start calling him.
I got the final five on the finish here.
All right, let's hear him.
So Scheffler was minus 20 with the win. Then we had Harmon minus 19, Schauffele minus 19, Clark minus 19, Fitzpatrick minus 16. Oh,
and then fucking our boy's last putt. The last putt of the day to catch like 75% of the rim of the cup.
Yeah.
Wow. I got goosebumps right now still. Yeah. I really do. He was getting ready to ring it up like Tiger, too,
when 100%. You watched the one. Dude, that putt was down. Like, that was down. I feel so bad for that dude because that's such a
horrible actually
feeling.
Cried. He was covering his face. He was crying.
I would be.
Dude, I've been bawling. I'd be still in the fetal position on that green, right where I hit the putt.
Yeah, certainly disappointing there.
Hey, just give me a blankie for the night.
Great finish. It's a little unfortunate we didn't get a playoff yesterday, but obviously congrats to Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah, but that last shot was almost as – but the playoff was three holes, though, because I looked it up. I would have loved to see the three-hole playoff, too, though.
Three-hole playoff would have been really, really
good.
Cool,
in the last year – Scottie Scheffler has been playing the
most. Oh, my God. The dude's in the top 10 every week. So, every single solitary week.
So I was saying to Ty before the show, probably a little cliche, but he would have to be my pick for Masters coming up.
I don't know. And I would say I got to check. I don't know.
I don't think that course lines up to his shot for some reason.
Well, that's what I was saying. I got to see how he's played previously in that. And you know, how it all lines up. But Scheffler, I think he tied for the biggest comeback in the players at 5 under.
Yeah, that sounds right.
At 5 back to start the final day. So, and that's his second player. So congrats.
Yeah, congrats. And definitely a really awesome tournament yesterday. Transitioning to some wrestling here. I know we wanted to.
Yeah, it's a wrestling podcast. So
well, we talk about
transitioning to wrestling.
We talk about everything here. So I definitely wanted to touch on the WWE Hall of Fame for 2024. A lot of the names have started to come out. Definitely an interesting class. The most recent name announced was Thunderbolt Patterson. Definitely.
Oh, awesome.
Awesome.
I didn't even know that. Awesome for him.
You didn't know that?
No, I had no idea.
Did you ever have a chance to?
No. He was like way like. To me, it's like I'm 1968 and on. You know what I mean? I have never seen like have seen a live like a TV match as I was a kid growing up ever. I saw some stuff later. You know what I mean? But
yeah, no. So he was the most recent name. He obviously worked with Bruiser Brody, Ole Anderson, Dusty Rhodes. Was a pretty predominant name in the NWA, definitely down in the South in the 70s, dealing with racism and everything.
Yeah, everywhere but WWF.
Yeah. Not a WWF guy, but down South wrestler.
But there was a lot of guys like that.
A territorial guy that, worked not really for New York, but a number of other places, but was the most recent name.
Yeah, he was over huge in Canada, too.
Yeah, was the most recent name in the class. Also announced was Muhammad Ali.
Seriously?
Yeah, Muhammad Ali's getting...
Yes, that's awesome.
Yeah, Muhammad Ali's getting inducted in this class.
What WrestleMania was he at?
One.
Three?
One.
Oh, he was one?
He was the...
Oh, with Liberace and all those people. That's right.
So he comes out in WrestleMania 1. It's Liberace and him. And the idea was going into the building... he was going to be the special referee for the match. I guess when he got to the building the day of, they realized he wasn't going to be able to be the ref in the match. So they had Pat Patterson. If you actually watch the main event of WrestleMania 1, Pat Patterson's the referee in the match because Ali wasn't able to do anything. Like, he couldn't remember the spots or anything.
No, he wasn't getting down, count three, getting up, dude. Yeah.
Right. And you've talked about this a lot. Around me, where you talk about the importance of a referee. Imagine it's the first WrestleMania. Ali's in the match as the main event, and there's a ref.
Dude, and they got to work around him.
Right.
That's funny that you brought it up like that. I didn't even think about it.
Versus a ref, like, a guy like...
Pat's out there. Pat's calling your spots for you. Hey, do this next. Guys, do this next.
Well, he probably booked the match, too.
Exactly,
Yeah, Muhammad Ali's obviously... interesting. I mean, he did have the work with Antonio Inoki, famous in Japan. It was closed circuit here in the U.S., really big event at the time. And also got involved in some other wrestling moments over the years. But
dude, that was huge. Him and Inoki, what was that, like 76?
I want to say it was 78.
Okay,
let's get a hat check on that.
Yeah, there you go, Ali. But that was so huge for the wrestling community. You know what I mean? Even though Inoki laid on his back and kicked at Ali's shins, like the whole thing, it was just so huge that, because you have to understand, a lot of people don't understand now. If you're 25 years old, boxing means basically nothing right now in the business of sports. But in the 60s, 70s, 80s, dude, if you were the heavyweight champion of the world, you were probably the most recognized face on the planet at that time. So wrestling was like building its way up to the boxing legitimacy.
Yeah.
It was the summer of 1976.
There you go, Hack.
On the money. You got to get one right.
All right. On the money.
Once a year.
On the money. I'll actually have to let you borrow it, Hack. I got this really good book by Josh Gross about the Inoki Ali fight and everything leading up to it.
Oh, dude, I would have loved, because I could compare that to me and Onita. Our first meeting with he had three interpreters behind him, lawyer, dude, it was crazy. What a great story.
Okay, we'll have to get to that.
Yeah,
time
you got
to
get Bubba tells it.
I've
even
heard
better
Bubba
than
tell
I know
the story before. I've heard the story. It's obviously a very famous story. We're going to have to get to that at some point here on the show. Also getting inducted is the U.S. Express, Barry Windham, not Barry Windham Clark, and Mike Rotunda, the U.S. Express tag team. I don't know if you have any.
Both of them are totally deserving. Both of them could work. We're unbelievably great workers.
Okay. Yeah.
Both of them.
All right. So this is getting like unanimous approval for the Hall of Fame class from you so far, Hack.
Yeah, but they are, dude. Yeah. I can't deny it. Anybody that you mentioned, dude, it'd be stupid to deny them. Those dudes worked their ass off in the business for years.
Yeah.
With the best of them every night of the week. And that's when guys were working seven times, maybe eight times a week. They might have been doing doubles on Sunday and Saturday back in those days. You know what I mean? You worked back then. Those guys probably had 10,000 matches in.
Yeah.
I might not have 1,000.
Yeah, it's a different business, honestly, right? The 80s yeah. guys versus the 90s guys. And you're a 90s guy. So it's a lot different.
And ECW was like my first year might have been 20 matches.
Right. Versus the WWF guys.
Well, no, I went
guys.
To USWA, so I caught a lot of matches in USWA because I was working there. But Goodhart only did once a month in Philly. You know what I mean? So if I stayed here for my whole first year, I might have had 11 or 12. But he sent me to the USWA in October, so then I was rolling like four a week right then, 16 a month for like 4 or 5 months.
And where was that? Was that?
That was with Jerry Lawler.
Okay, yeah.
I was you know, we were doing Nashville, Memphis, Evansville, Helena, Arkansas, like stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely really cool stuff back then in the U.S.
And everybody who was anybody went through there.
Yeah, it's the territory. Even
anybody
the Rock
who was everybody.
The Rock was talking about it.
I was just
going
to tell you that, which we'll get to.
Yeah, so that's certainly Memphis. Obviously, really cool stuff there. And the U.S. Express, they were WWF Tag Team Champions going into WrestleMania 1. Obviously,
Who's the U.S. Express?
That's Barry Windham and Mike Rotunda.
Yeah. I don't even remember that name.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Well, they're getting inducted as a tag team.
Oh, that was one?
Yeah.
No wonder I don't remember it.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're real-life brother.
I remember more singles
for
than I do as that. You know what I'm saying?
And Barry Windham, obviously, all-time,
total singles. Wow.
All-time, all-time worker.
I got a great story about me, him, Funk, Double Cage, Florida, at the building that we were just talking about.
In Fort Lauderdale?
Yeah, at the War Memorial, Double Cage.
Okay. Well, I mean,
dude, it's so crazy how stuff just like comes around. We were just talking about that building.
Well, what's the double?
All right, so I'm doing a double cage for Kurt Bauer, MLW.
MLW, yes.
Okay, so it's like, I forget who, I know it was me, Wyndham was in the match, Funk, and I don't remember anybody else. But
you remember the important
people. Barry, and it was so funny because I'm standing there I'm doing autographs, right? And I don't even know that me and Barry are on the opposite sides of the building right now. And I'm like right by an exit because I want to go outside and smoke pot and do whatever I want to do. He comes in, gives me a hug. I say, what's going on? And like somebody comes up and he's like, yeah, you guys are working together tonight. You want to like cut this fucking, you want to stop kissing each other right now in front of all the fans?
Keeping some kayfabe alive in 2003.
So we got in the back and we just knew it was going to be a cluster. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, Barry, I'm like, yo, dude, hey, let's just relax together. He goes, that's all I had to say. And he's like, I'm in. He goes, he knew exactly what I wanted. You know what I mean? Let them all do the work. Me and you will screw around in a corner for 20 minutes. Worst thing I ever decided. Next thing you know, a chair. Terry Funk is in one ring. He throws a chair all the way up in the air and lands on me. And I got Barry with him, and like I'm behind him like a half-ass Haji Kajime on him. Chair comes down, hits us both right in the head. And we're like, that motherfucking Funk.
Wow.
Shots like, we're 30 feet away from him, minding our own business.
Well, shouts out to the Funker for getting everybody involved in the match.
I love that dude.
You thought you had a day off in the office, but no.
Yeah.
Funk's making you
we
earn.
Tried.
All right. Well, shouts out to Barry Windham. Well deserved. We're going to have to take a look into that MLW card. Maybe we'll do that as a show someday. But the other big name, obviously, Bull Nakano, didn't have a ton of work in WWF herself. Had some during their women's division in 1995. Certainly one of the all-time great workers. Go out there, check out All Japan Women's. She had some tremendous matches. So far ahead of her time. And Hack, I know after I told you she was a professional golfer, you loved her as well.
Yeah, but I was a little bit, maybe I shouldn't have been shocked, but I was a little bit shocked when I heard her name there because I knew she hadn't spent time there, but neither had the Rock and Roll Express spent a lot of time, but they're in that Hall of Fame, you know what I mean? But I also knew she was god over in Japan.
Yeah. super, you know, super worker.
Yeah.
And they've seemed to put
like in... Like straight God.
Yeah. They've seemed to put in certain workers over the last couple of years who, you know, maybe they didn't have their time spent in WWF, but they are recognizing them for their work in wrestling overall. Like Jushin Liger, for example. Names like that, probably who WWE wants to honor on some extent, but didn't really spend a lot of time in the Fed itself. And the last name that has been announced so far, obviously near and dear to our hearts, Paul Heyman. Certainly as well deserving as it gets for their version of a Hall of Fame.
More deserving than anybody you just said, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, look, from everything that he's done as a creative force in the business.
Not more, the most deserving. I can't say that more, but I just want to change my word.
No. You're not burying anybody, but yeah, Heyman, I mean, look, the things that he's been involved in and to still be involved to this day in the top programs, it's just remarkable. I mean, yeah, the guy's absolute legend in the business, and I don't know if you have anything else to add, Hack.
No, dude, he's the man.
He's the man. Yeah.
He's the GOAT.
He's the GOAT.
Dude, he kind of is the GOAT.
Now, when you say GOAT, do you mean best of all-time manager?
Best all-time everything. Cutting promo, being with the guys, the backstage politics, rolling from this guy to Brock Lesnar. He always knew which guy to roll to. You know what I mean? For the past 15 years, he's been literally on the top of the business with the top guy.
Yeah. No, it's really...
Dude, there's a reason.
To go where he's been at certain points, where he's been outside of WWE and then brought back to where he is now. If you had said to me, like, you know, 9-10 years ago, would Paul Heyman be in, you know, still in main events? I'd be very surprised. But yet he's still managed to survive and kind of reinvent himself always throughout the years.
Well, and earlier, even, I guess it was before ECW, it was WCW. Wasn't he with The Undertaker? But obviously it wasn't The Undertaker.
Mark Callis, he was managing down in WCW as well.
Oh, yeah. Before, he was in the business 10 years before he started in ECW, I would roughly say. I'm just saying,
that's like another big name. Obviously, it wasn't big then.
Go watch his work in Memphis. Go watch, you know, he's been really involved forever. He started taking pictures back in the day for WWWF. He snuck into buildings taking pictures.
Yeah.
And he would sneak into like booking meetings and
selling programs. His first job, he was hawking programs at Madison Square Garden. I think he tells the story, something like that.
Yeah.
Which is one of the things that I believe that he actually, when he talks.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to, you know, look, when wrestlers tell stories, you got to always like examine them a little bit. And especially when Paul Lee does, you know.
But I heard that one 30 years ago. So I know it's not like with me, if you heard a story from me like 30 years ago, that version is way more credible than my version now.
Okay, so
you know what
I'm
saying?
Listen to our show. 30 years
of each, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
stuff gets blurred
over the years. But obviously Paul Heyman, well deserving of the WWE Hall of Fame. And it brings us to a great transition where today on the show our topic is ECW Mount Rushmore. I asked you guys last week to do your homework. I know we all have our four names. This was really tough to do. I don't know about for you guys. Limiting it to just four names for ECW was really hard because
I got an idea.
What?
I got an idea off the top of my head. Let's start with somebody and let them try and let's figure out who can get the... All right. This feel like if Ali starts and say, I got this guy, I bet all you guys have this guy.
Okay, fine.
You know what I mean?
I'll start it off then.
But you're obviously going to have totally different...
I guarantee there can't be more than eight guys, I would think, between us four. More than ten. All right, let's say 10 dudes that should be on this list.
Okay, well, let's kick it off. I'm going to say my first name. All right,
what's your first guarantee that everybody's on?
I don't think any of us would not have Sabu. I got Sabu on my Mount Rushmore.
Sabu.
That's a unanimous. We all have him. Let's talk about Sabu. When he came in the business, he was pretty much relegated to indies in Japan. He was working over in FMW. ECW was the outlet for him to be him. It did not, he did not fit into the box of what was early 90s wrestling at that time in the States. and working that style in ECW, it was the best avenue for him to showcase that. And he was just absolutely incredible. The work that he put out there, the just creativity of the matches, the bumps, the spots. He's a one of one in wrestling. I love Sabu so much.
Go ahead. Love him too, but you got your Hayabusas also.
Yes, but Sabu was before Hayabusa a little bit. You know, I mean, there were some times.
I'm not saying, but like the type of guy that said that they are. You know what I mean? They're very close in wrestling style.
They're similar, but I think that Sabu brought you some of what his uncle gave him, which was the kind of just
the blood and guts more. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. He could hardcore it more than he could fit in both styles easily more. You agree, Ali?
Yeah, I would agree. I would think. I mean, his innovation with weapons, as far as tables, ladders, guardrail, chair. I mean,
everything.
You name it.
Everything, yeah. I mean, just doing the moonsaults off the chairs. And Ty, I mean, I know you have them as well. I mean, what does Sabu mean to you?
I don't know. I've said this on Twitter a couple of times because every time I like find myself watching a match of his, I honestly think he's the most innovative wrestler move-wise that I've seen. Just everything when it, like you said, when it, the triple jump, the... Just everything that he does, the moonsaults, the
face buster with the chair through the table.
Just everything he does. And it's like calculated chaos.
Yes, that's a great way of putting it.
Yeah, it's like calculated chaos in like what he does. But like he makes being a human missile look graceful. You know? Like yeah. He's just very, very good, and I'm not shocked that we all have him on.
No, not at all. And, you know, he was there from the start of ECW. He was there almost until the end. In 2000, he had some disputes with Paulie and the company with payments and stopped working there. But obviously, just an absolute legend, and ECW is where he made his bread and butter. Heck, I don't know if you have anything to add about Sabu.
No, just that, wow, he was just him, Cactus Jack. Literally, I could go out there, and it would just happen. And it would just happen. It's just great. Those matches, I would have to talk the least to my opponent. Dude, we would literally not say like 20 words to each other the whole match. It was great. It was poetry.
What do you think? What do you think makes that? Is it just like it just kind of happens?
It just kind of happens. Because let's say I've wrestled 20 guys more than 5 times.
Okay.
To give you an example, you know what I mean? I can't give you an example if I wrestled a guy twice because that's not enough data for my head. You know what I'm saying? But there's matches that you have with guys that aren't easy. They're just not easy. You know what I'm saying?
Do you think that's partly because you're so willing to take offense from another guy and he's so good at giving it that you're just like...
Well, Styles, absolutely. And the same with Cactus, too.
Yeah, like,
Cactus wasn't like the spotter that Sabu was, but Cactus was all over you all the time doing something.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And you're the type of dude who's willing to just accept offense, you know, and just make something look good. Yeah. So it was kind of like you said, like a perfect sound,
take a breath.
Right.
Literally, I'm not blowing up.
No, I mean, look, some of those matches you had with Sabu, those are...
I would turn to him, dude, because we made... My hack, stop saying dude. All right, we would main event Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. You know what I mean? And I go out there. I said, "Dude, let's go steal this show." And he just shake his head.
It wouldn't be hard with Sabu to steal the show. I mean, that guy was just incredible.
Yeah, you knew when you were saying it. I knew that he got it. Also, because there's some guys. All right, here we go. I'll give you a perfect example. I can't go out and have a match with Chris Candido that I can have with Sabu. Chris Candido could probably do 90% of the stuff that Sabu can do, but I can't do the stuff that I want to do to Candido because he's not Sabu.
Well, that's a great way of putting it. And obviously, Chris Candido, hell of a worker, like you said, 90%, if not 100%. Like, he could work
maybe
all day.
Not the triple jump, but I bet if you gave him an hour and a half to work on it, he would have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I also think, like I was saying previously, is that, like, you were willing to take Sabu's offense. Sabu was also willing to take his own offense, which made it even way better. Crash, you know what I'm burn. Saying? Yeah, like, which even made it way better.
I never saw him do this until... I don't remember ever. So said they're doing. I'm watching the old ECW TV tapes an hour and a half ago or so, and it was the big buildup between Taz and Sabu, because Sabu, it started. He was supposed to wrestle Taz, but Sabu had a date in Japan already.
No showed. Yeah,
he didn't no show.
That's Paul what Heyman
screwed
said.
Up. He knew about Sabu's date, but he still booked it anyway, and he expected Sabu to say, screw Japan and come work with us then.
Yeah, right. He's probably getting more money in New Japan at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that built up for like 6 months. So then finally, Sav, there's this big cluster screw job in the ring. Has nothing to do with either one of those two. Because you know Paulie, he could roll four matches in a row. He could roll from a tag match to cleaner, clearing the locker room out to everybody back in. And that'll roll into a singles match. That'll roll into the championship match. Paul was great at that stuff. So they finally get to it. This is like a couple weeks, and I would have never noticed, but it's a couple weeks before our first pay-per-view. And then finally those two get in the ring. Oh, so Sabu grabs the microphone and says, fuck you, Taz, you midget, get your ass out here. And he had never said a word on the microphone before. I forgot all about this. And Joey's like, oh my God, Sabu just broke his silence. Fonzie comes out. Sabu ends up putting Fonzie on a table outside of the ring. And, you know, he sets the chair up. He hits the chair, the top rope, then through the table. This one, he just hit the chair, leaped the whole top rope, and leg dropped Fonzie through the table. He took this. I mean, his legs broke the table with Fonzie on it, but he took that 8-foot bump in the air right onto that concrete on his ass. Did not break his fall at all.
I got to ask you something about Sabu in spots, because he talked about this on Twitter a couple months back. He said he would intentionally miss spots in matches sometimes to give his matches a sense of realism. Did you ever recall when you were working with
him? I've seen him do it. Not working with me, but I've seen him take a step off to the side, and it actually happened today. I'm like, why did he take a step off to the side and almost miss him with that spot?
Because Lance Storm talked about working with Sabu, and he said Sabu would call the spot, and he'd say, I'm going to miss this. And he would do it as a way to add some more realism, because when he would occasionally miss a spot...
It's not a dance, dude. Fight is not a dance.
Yeah, fights are ugly sometimes, right?
Fights are ugly all the time.
Yeah, like, so I don't know. I always thought that was super cool about Sabu. Obviously, super well-deserving. I was not shocked at all that we all had him on our Mount Rushmore. Oliver, who do you have as your second name for the Mount Rushmore?
Before we close out on Sabu, I just wanted to add some stats.
Oh, yeah. Give us some stats. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
So Sabu is a 3-time ECW heavyweight champion.
Nothing.
He's a 3-time tag team champion in ECW.
Oh, that's significant.
He's one of 3 men in ECW to win all 3 titles, the tag, ECW, heavyweight, and the TV title.
Let's get back to that later.
And,
wow.
He's the only ECW wrestler to win the heavyweight belt in Eastern Championship Wrestling and Extreme Championship Wrestling.
Oh, I've done that.
Oh, I don't know about that. Hey, I think you have, because you beat the Don Morocco for the belt.
Was it Eastern then?
I think it was. Oh, was it that transition?
Todd was the owner then. Oh, no, it wasn't Extreme. It was definitely still Eastern. Oh. It wasn't Extreme until Paul Lee changed it.
Yeah, so then I think you have
I
as
might
well.
Be one there. Oh. I'm either or. I hack, love the rest of the stats.
Hack check is checking Oliver?
I had no idea. He had 3-time. So he's a 3-time heavyweight championship, 3-time tag, one of 3 guys to hold the
all 3
TV title.
The Triple Crown.
The TV title, the tag titles, and the heavyweight title.
Wow.
Wow, that's more significant than I don't. I guess it was. Were they all with the RVD?
The two tag wars, yeah.
Two,
yeah.
And then a third one was with Taz.
Wait a minute. Him and Taz won the tag titles together? Oliver,
I mean, he's our resident hack checker. Of course he's going to have this information.
Who was that against?
I don't know who the was Eliminators? Against.
Yeah, probably around that, if that during that time period. We'll have to take a look at that.
Who the heck? Wow.
We'll have to take a look.
All right, give us your pick for your next one.
My second pick, Tommy Dreamer.
Okay, I don't have Tommy. He was one of my outside looking in. I did not include him on my Mount Rushmore. Hack, how about yourself? No, did not include him.
I have, there's, no, it's I have tough. So it's many so guys that are, to me, very, very, you know what? All right, well, I'll tell you what. How can I put...
Well, hold on. Don't say any of those names yet. Okay. Oliver, you say why you put Tommy Dreamer on your Mount Rushmore.
I put Tommy Dreamer on Mount Rushmore.
What's his stats? Start with his stats.
Well, Tommy Dreamer...
He probably has the least belts of anybody.
...is a one-time ECW heavyweight champion.
Okay.
No tag?
That only lasted for a show length.
He lost it to Justin Credible.
Yes, he did. That's internal Tommy fact.
Lost it to Justin Credible. He booked it that way, sure.
He never wanted it, never even wanted it, but had to take it.
Okay.
And he's a three-time ECW tag champ.
Do you know
who? Him and Raven were him a champ in 99.
Him and Raven, and then, there's one back in like 94, I think. Him and somebody that I don't even... I saw earlier, I have to look
you don't
up
the remember
name
the name, does it, like, ring a bell? But
I saw the name earlier. I'd have to look it up again.
Like, 94 is like the beginning of our TV and all
but,
that stuff.
I mean, Tommy didn't have the championships, but, he was the spirit of ECW. I mean, from top to bottom, when you think about it. And, you know, there were times when... It's tough. He's getting offered to go other places and wrestle other places, and he stuck it out with ECW and always stayed and remained loyal. Whether that was right or wrong, I don't know. But
yeah, I certainly commend his loyalty and the love that he had for ECW. I don't know if anyone ever loved ECW as much as Tommy Dreamer loved ECW. He loved ECW. Like, your Hack's looking at me like, what? What I mean by that is...
Nobody has more seniority in that company than me. Nobody.
What I'm saying is that Tommy, whether it was being office guy or not, booking it towards, 99, 2,000 times when he did, obviously he loved ECW and the work that he put in. Look, Paul Lee basically...
behind the scenes, too, a lot of people never knew that he was in charge of all the merch.
Yeah.
Like the printing of it, the girls selling it, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Dude, that was Tommy.
And when Paul Lee was either checked out or looking for, new TV deals...
The last
or,
year of the company, Paul Lee wasn't looking for anything. It was a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
Because I handed Paul Lee two different people that were ready to pay him and take over the company, and he turned both of them down. Me and Todd had a guy, and then I had another guy on my own.
Right. So,
and he turned them both down.
And correct me if I'm wrong, you were there. Paul Lee was not at a lot of these shows.
Well,
Tommy was running
a lot. I could say
them.
Well, let me put it this way. For the time I got back, my first night with Rhino, Paul Heyman was not in the locker room in Louisiana then, and probably wasn't until any time after that.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's...
My first night back from WCW.
Yeah, that's, like, look, Tommy, obviously, look, he had...
Right after my...
He had the feud with Raven, which spanned nearly 2 years, one of the best feuds in ECW history, all the angle with Beulah, different feuds with, all kinds of people. Tommy's super deserving. I didn't include him in mine. Ty, you and Hack, you guys didn't have me either. Obviously, I know why you did have him, Oliver, but, he was an outsider.
Ty's probably feel the same way I am about this. All right, Ty, who's your guy that everybody else has?
I'm not sure everyone has him, but I think they should. And we just got done talking to him going into the Hall of Fame, Paul Heyman.
Yeah, so
I don't think you have him, and I don't think you have him.
I don't have him because I went off of in-ring work.
Same.
But
I went workers
would
only.
Would you consider changing your fourth pick for Paul Heyman?
No.
Okay, good.
I'm going off, I love it. I'm going off for work.
What about I'm going all four workers. If I was doing non-workers, obviously, you know, Paulie, Todd, and Joey Styles, to me, those guys
Right. And amazing. I don't even think we got to talk. I mean, we just went over talking about him, all his accolades, so that's just who I
I love Paulie, obviously, yeah.
All right, now non-worker, do you have that?
No.
We just
I don't know, did Paulie work or what?
No. he was a manager.
A worker. I'm sorry. All right, everybody, point it out. I'm an idiot.
It's all right.
He can't just bypass that and go on. He's got to look smart.
He has to. Well, he's got to bury his dad.
Hack, you wouldn't let me live something down like that, so I can't let you. I need every chance I can. All right, so my the next two I have are workers, but I'm going to say my next one, Rob Van Dam.
Yes, we all have him. We all have him. I mean,
and Rob, for me, very, very similar to Sabu. As far now, those two together, the innovation tag team spots that they were, but like Rob,
even against each other, and then being in the ring, no matter what the situation was,
right? Two of the top guys, worker wise, in the
wow.
I mean, both technically, not so much Sabu, even though he could, but both technically high-flying, innovation, the way that he did everything. I mean, over titles, he's got it all. There's not much more else I can say.
Yeah, I mean, look, out of all the guys that came into ECW, the guys that you would say are ECW guys, you know, there's guys that, you know, went and worked in WCW or worked in WWF before. RVD's an ECW guy. People recognize him as an ECW guy. And he got the belt in WWE. Like, he was that over. And just a complete superstar.
Kicked first night there, kicked Vince in the face and busted him open.
Good.
And I heard Vince came back and he's like, I loved it. Perfect.
No, Rob was so innovative. I mean, he wasn't there at the infancy in the company. I think he came in mid-96, I think he came into ECW. But he was there for the last 4 or 5 years and just incredible work. That TV title run.
Yeah. You know how many days it was?
I want to say.
Here we go.
Let me see if I can get it. I'm going to say it was 500 some days long.
700 days.
Wow. That's incredible.
He won it from Bam Bam Bigelow, April 8th, 1998.
Wow, and he vacated it, correct?
With and went through 700 days.
What's the vacated?
He broke his foot.
Yeah.
And then when he came back, he introduced the Van Terminator, if you remember the Van Terminator.
Oh, yeah, but wait a minute. The one jumping from the top rope all the way to the other side?
Yes.
Ollie, but did you go into enough that who did he vacate it? What happened? Was there a tournament or anything?
I believe there was, and I think Rhino won it.
I'm not sure. I would assume that Rhino won it because with the whole thing going on with the network, with Cyrus
and
Rhino.
Yeah, I don't remember any. That makes total sense.
I'm pretty sure Van Dam came back and faced Rhino. That was his first guy coming back, was Rhino that he faced. So
did he ever get it again, Van Dam?
I believe so, yeah. And then he didn't win the ECW Heavyweight Championship until, like Tosh said earlier. Also a two-time tag champ with Sabu, each run lasting over 100 days.
Wow. Those matches with the Eliminators, the matches that he had with Sabu, pretty much everything he was involved in at that point was just can't miss. And just super, super amazing work. And yeah, I don't know how you'd have Mount Rushmore and ECW without RVD. One of the things I love about the AEW matches he's been doing is he comes out to that Pantera Walk song. That was just such a great entrance. And
shout out to Tony Khan for paying for that.
Yes, I love it. Yeah.
No, dude, apparently you ain't gotta pay for crap anymore. I'm just talking to somebody this weekend when I was wherever, Detroit or wherever the heck I was this weekend. You can buy it costs $1,200. Norm Connors, Pittsburgh.
Okay.
He has that's where I was, Pittsburgh. Norm Connors, what a great IWC. Guy. I used to work with Punk back for Norm Connors when Punk was just breaking into the big business, like in the mid-90s, I think it was. So he told me for his funeral homes he pays $1,250 and he has access to any song that's ever been written. And I said, wait a minute. I said, so the black chick that just has the new country song, He goes, well, they're not good. People aren't going to want to play that at the funeral. He goes, but yes, I get it. It's brand new. It comes right in there.
Interesting. I don't 12, know.
The Beyonce song.
Yeah, but no, Norm and Norm Connors, if he says it, that's a fact.
Okay. I just looked it up.
Any song would be brand new when he owns it.
I just looked it up. The TV title, Super Crazy, won a tournament. He defeated Rhino in the tournament. Oh, him and Rhino. Final.
Yeah, I remember that a little bit.
Living Dangerously 2000. Super Crazy. Awesome worker. Didn't quite make my Mount Rushmore, but great worker. Crazy.
Great worker. Love Crazy. Love him.
Great dude.
He's all the best.
I'm going to go with my next name here. I don't know if any of you guys are going to have him. And I think that he doesn't get a lot of love sometimes for ECW. Shane Douglas. Does anybody else have Shane on their list? Nobody else.
Close. No, but he was on my left off, my right under on the left off list for me.
Oh, man. To me, Shane Douglas.
The franchise.
Look, I there was something about him as a ECW wrestler that really put it on the map as this is different. You're not going to get this elsewhere because he was very limited. All right.
This is where you want to go. Shane Douglas threw down an NWA belt. That's exactly what you're talking about. This is different. You got balls.
Yes.
Like the biggest balls in the industry right now to do that.
Yes.
Because the NWA title meant something huge right then.
Yes.
And like this Dennis Carluzzo dude who, there was like four guys who paid money who still liked own the NWA and they were trying to bring in ECW and Dennis Carluzzo pissed Todd Gordon off. So they screwed Dennis Carluzzo that night. He was right there at ringside.
Yeah, they double crossed him.
Yeah, exactly.
Look. Between that, the original three-way dance with him, Terry Funk, Sabu, his work as a heel, his work as a top guy, he really got to showcase that he could do it on a big-time level after he never got that chance in either WCW or WWF. I love Shane Douglas. To me, he really helped make ECW what it was and gave it a lot of like credibility. I know that times, you know, maybe if you go back and watch some of his stuff, it might not hold up great today. But for the time when he was calling out Ric Flair and calling him Dick Flair, that kind of stuff, you weren't seeing that elsewhere. You know, you weren't.
Never. Never. Not especially Flair.
Yeah.
Hey, you can call out an indie wrestler or something like that.
Right. He's calling out Flair. He's calling out Flair. He's calling out the WWF. He's talking down on the other wrestling.
Well, actually, he was Stone Cold before Stone Cold.
Yeah.
Stone Cold got the ECW, and what did he do? He became Hogan and buried WCW in every promo.
Yeah.
That's kind of what Shane was doing, but wrestling wasn't ready for it yet.
Yeah, and he
literally, he had the exact same thing.
He had that chip on his shoulder as a performer, which a lot of you guys did because, you know, you guys were the Island of Misfit Toys, right? Well, Shane Douglas was cast away from WCW and he was cast away from WWF, both times landing in ECW and really making a name for himself there. Also, really good work as a promoter. Like you were talking before the show, his work promoting in Pittsburgh and the Golden Dome, some of the biggest ticket sales ECW ever had. Really, I love Shane Douglas.
Here, lizard.
I love, what do you got to say, Ty?
He's not on mine. If I were to adjust and go just in-ring workers and take Paul Heyman off my personal list, it would be a tussle between him and a couple other guys, like we said, Tommy.
All right, well, who's your other guy? Let's hear.
Now we're going to go to Ollie next for his next guy.
Well, bubble guys.
Well, Hack hasn't given one of his guys yet.
All right, yeah, then. I got you. We all got you.
I had the belt five times. Yeah, let's get past me now.
Let's talk about you. Why are we getting past you?
RVD, Sabu, me. That's three consensus. All consensus.
And just going off you, I mean, the five-time heavyweight champ more than anybody else. Like you said earlier that I was going to bring up, longevity, the longest tenured in Eastern.
And left for a year.
And in Eastern and ECW Championship Wrestling. The entrance, iconic, nothing. Nothing really compares to that.
Yeah, blah.
I know you don't want to.
We gotta put you over. But how could we not?
But we're just
get.
Trust me, this is the last thing I want to do is put you over. But but it's all true statistically. The accolades for you, and you know that's about it.
Biggest pop in company history,
and the man who made the Singapore cane famous in America.
The Sandman.
Ladder matches.
First to bring a ladder in. First to bring a guardrail into the ring.
How about a cigarette, a beer? Oh, but dude, I got a lot of firsts.
All right, that's enough. Quit talking about yourself.
Don't get me started, dude. We'll be going. I'll be going. All right, Ollie, I want to hear what I did.
That's all my four, by the way. My four, I'm done. Those are all my four.
You are the five-time ECW World Heavyweight Champion. And a one-time ECW tag champion with...
Squirt.
Yep.
Okay. Too cold.
We had all the belts.
1995.
Heavyweight tag, and he was the TV. Squirt was... Did RV, who beat Squirt? I'd like to hear... Find that out right now while we go into our next segment. Who beat Scorp for that title?
I'll have to take a look here. I don't know.
Scorp for that? Yeah, I mean, and that was okay, that so was what? What year was
Shane Douglas beat him.
Okay.
All right, so
or Mikey. Ken, Mikey beat him as well.
And Shane had the TV title?
And Eddie. He had it. Actually,
wait, do you have Shane's? Do you have all Shane's stats there? Do we go over that?
I don't have all his.
Yeah, Shane.
I have. I think I actually have Shane.
I know. He's a four-time ECW World Heavyweight Champion.
Yeah, he is. He's a four-time.
He's got four. Yep.
Yeah, and he's a two-time ECW World Television Champion.
And yeah, and two-time ECW TV title holder. So,
all right. So we have all of us agreeing, RVD, Sabu, and me.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I went over Tommy, so my list is done.
Well, I'm done as well. Let's go.
I have no problem with Tommy there.
And my list is done. Paul, RVD, Sabu, Hack.
Wow. Hack, and what is your four?
I've RVD, Sabu, me, and Tommy.
So you're done as well?
I don't know, dude.
It was so... You know, the toughest ones for me were...
That's my list. Yeah.
Okay.
RVD, Sabu, me, and Tommy. Absolutely.
Toughest for me were some of the guys where you might not say that they were ECW guys. Like Terry Funk
helped make us.
But Terry Funk stamped ECW. But my only issue is I think Terry Funk is like a vagabond worker. Like he was working everywhere. And he was never staying anywhere that long. So it's kind of hard for me to say Terry Funk's an ECW wrestler.
Right, just because the longevity and, I mean,
He was with us every month for a couple years. He was with us every time we were anywhere.
He was, but
he was on like the second TV taping ever.
Right, but
the first ECW pay-per-view in the main event.
Yes, he was. I mean, Terry Funk, to me, it's really hard to leave him off, but he would come and go. He would come in 94 and then he'd go work Japan. He would go work WCW. He would come back. He would go work WWF. He would leave. He would come back. He would go work WCW.
Chainsaw Charlie.
Yeah. Like
I don't even know how to put this in the right word. I feel like his impact was more felt on that company, like within the locker room and everything like that, more than it was as like an ECW wrestler, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? If that makes
sense.
Like, he was more of a mentor in the locker room, so the fans can't really appreciate. I mean, the fans can appreciate that, but like to me, I wouldn't put them on there for in-ring work.
His in-ring work in ECW was really strong, but to me, it's like...
The longevity.
Guys like him and Cactus. Like, Cactus's ECW work was insane. And it's probably the best promo work of his career. But
What a promo.
What a promo. I mean, he'd give you goosebumps.
Jeez, wow.
And he could do babyface, he could do heel, he could do anything. He could do comedy, he could do serious. But Cactus was another name that I didn't include because Cactus, to me,
I didn't even consider Cactus.
Right, neither did I.
Never even entered my mind. How about you, Ollie? You're totally right.
But he worked in ECW for, you know, almost 3 years, 2.5 years. He left 96 early in March 96 when he went to...
Have the bill?
No.
Him and Mikey had tag straps.
Tag team, yep.
Well, right, yeah. there's like a lot of guys that are kind of like, stop there. Like, some guys... a couple years, some guys only, you know, like you had your Jerichos in there, your Mysterios, your Eddie Guerreros, your, you know, Dean Malenko's, your Stone Cold. Stone Cold, Benoit for a couple.
And I don't think of any of them as ECW guys.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Doesn't mean they're not phenomenal workers and everything like that. I just, this is the ECW Mount Rushmore, and I just don't consider them ECW.
The other toughest name for me that I really, really, really wanted to put on there, but I just couldn't over the four that I had on.
Don't say Taz.
Well, Taz was right up there too, but yeah. this was my next guy off, New Jack. And the reason New Jack, I didn't have him, I just don't know if he had like the in-ring moments, even though the moments themselves were incredible. Like, look, New Jack brought a certain element and style that is never duplicated again. And I think that that was showcased in ECW. Balcony dives, the music, Natural Born Killers playing. I love New Jack. It was really hard for me to
leave. Coming out with a trash can full of weapons, just ready to go.
I mean, when you heard that missile drop, the crowd got, yeah.
Exactly.
That was like, oh, shit's about to go down.
Dude,
like,
when we went to Buffalo for a pay-per-view, there was 20, because the thing was, bring a weapon for New Jack. There was 20 trash cans full. No, there was like 200, everybody, because the cheese grater is easy to go pick up at the
dollar toaster oven, vacuum.
It was so incredible. It was a room like half the size of this where we're sitting right now, packed with stuff. It was great.
That's awesome. Now, I love New Jack, man. He brought like just a total different vibe of anything. Like if you were watching wrestling in 1999, 98, you're flipping the channels, you're never getting anything like New Jack on the other channel. And that's never. What ECW was about.
Never. Even if you're not a wrestling fan, you'll probably stop for a couple seconds.
Right.
Yo, did he just hit him with a vacuum cleaner? Right. Like,
I love New Jack, so it was like, for me, it was tough to leave him off there. So that was
Taz is close, though, too.
Yes, he was. Taz, to me, also was my next name that I left off.
I heard Joey going through, because I don't remember. He choked down RVD the month before our first pay-per-view. I was watching that show before we did this tonight. I don't remember, but he choked out everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody. Like Paul pushed him to the moon.
Yeah, that 90,
the straight moon.
That 95 run up until Barely Legal through 96, where Taz is working heel, and he's got Fonzie as the manager, and he's just beating all kinds of guys from everywhere, and he's
Paul
choking them all.
Paul Marlins, who was hot in the MMA circuit, yes. Right there. Paulie got Missy to do the dirty work for that one. Swear to God.
No, I've heard her tell the story before. Yeah. I've heard it before.
And Taz, like you said, right up there, I completely agree, even though it's like he got super pushed super quick. And I know we were doing I know Mount Rushmore is just, you know, solo workers and everything like that, but I would be remiss. I thought about putting on the Dudley Boys. Wasn't sure
what
if
about
we
the Public Enemy?
Wasn't sure if we were just going solo workers. I didn't know if they would have counted. So they are right.
Yeah, it's
a different entity.
Yeah, I mean, tag team wise, they'd be an ECW's tag team Mount Rushmore.
Well, maybe that's next episode.
Well, we could do that. We could do that another time.
I like that.
Tag team Mount Rushmore. We could do that
another
time.
You guys have no idea how good Teddy really was.
Oh, Ted Petty, amazing work.
Oh, I know. Like I said,
he was so overseas, like big time as Cheetah Kid or whatever with Tiger Mask. Was he?
I think you're right about
Cheetah Kid.
Yeah.
Wow.
What a pull right there.
Yeah, you have more knowledge on that.
Two pulls in one night.
Yeah, I think.
So, yeah. So, tag team Mount Rushmore, obviously on another show sometime. Yeah. So,
no, that's a great call. And certainly awesome. Look, this was really.
So that's great. There, we got to three, but it's kind of like we all knew when we were talking about it that we were going to do this episode that we kind of figured out that it was going to be probably something like this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The fourth one is hard, dude. For me, it's not hard because it's Tommy. He's my boy. You know what I mean? But for you guys, I could say that's
well, Oliver had Tommy and Tosh had Shane. And then I went more outside the box with Paul, not an in-ring worker, but. And I know also, Hack, before the show, you had mentioned.
Well, to me, I could have us, RVD, Sabu, me, and Tommy, and have Paul the head above us. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, dude, there's
cheating. That's cheating.
God looking over us.
Like, there's no real, like, argument from me, right. from either Shane or Tommy. Like, there's
any just, of them.
For Tom, I was between Tommy, Shane, and Bam Bam Bigelow as my fourth.
See, Bam Bam also fit in the category to me of, like, maybe his best work was in ECW.
Shane's lackey.
Yeah, maybe his best work was in ECW, but to me, he wasn't an ECW guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
that's why I kind of left him off. But he did have some great moments with Taz.
Oh, when they went through, I did not know that was happening. When Taz and Bigelow went through the ring, I didn't know that was happening.
What was your reaction?
I was like, that's the greatest thing I have ever seen.
It really was.
The greatest thing I have ever... I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm not part of this.
If you guys have...
That's kind of what I'm thinking too.
If you guys,
like, oh, that's great.
Why didn't I think...
Not there.
If you guys haven't seen it yet, definitely check out the Bam Bam Bigelow Dark Side of the Ring episode.
Seen it.
Taz goes into the spot and how they did it with a piece of tape on the top rope. That is just incredible how they actually timed it to know the length where it wouldn't kill him on the hitting.
Dude,
the
Taz thing. Missed his head by like this much. Too.
Yeah. Yeah. Like clearing that was just insane. Yeah.
And so he's
like,
close.
Yeah.
Like, because I just watched it not too long ago.
And they did it on the ramp.
That was later on. Too.
Which nobody. It's like it's so funny how I'm thinking, why would you do that again? And then you do it again, and it's even almost as good as the first time. And Paul goes back to the hole. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't think anybody's expecting you to do it again.
And you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Andy did the throwing Spike Dudley from the ring to the crowd.
Chucked him.
Like 6 rows deep. Like 6 rows deep.
Well, in the first couple times, I'm pretty sure it was set up to throw him to certain people. But then afterwards, it was like, Spike's like, dude, I didn't know if they were going to catch me or they were going to scatter.
Yeah. Well,
but that was Spike. Knew his role.
Made for a great visual.
He knew his role, though. You know what I'm saying?
Great was long dart.
Yeah, Spike's tremendous worker as well.
Oh, my God. A lot of people don't. Boy, same thing with Sabu. Guys, you should have seen Sabu doing his work back in the day before he was even... I never saw him before I had met him, you know what I mean? But then after I went to Japan, I was over there with Ralphie, and he was showing me all these old tapes and stuff. Sabu could go with anybody, match anybody hold for hold, even. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it morphed into something different.
Yeah, well, I mean, it just shows you developing your character and your persona... Such a huge part. And oftentimes, a lot of the workers, they can go different styles. It's just what they choose to do. So that's our ECW Mount Rushmore. Certainly awesome. We're going to do tag team at a later date because certainly there's at least 4 tag teams deserving of that honor. But that's it for our ECW Mount Rushmore topic. Next week on the show, we're going to be covering WCW Uncensored 1999. Hack, you had a 3-way dance with you, Raven, and Bam Bam Bigelow on the show.
I would have said that match never happened. I don't remember that. Me, Raven, and Bigelow, I would have said nope, didn't happen.
You're going to have to watch the show because that's...
And my boys have heard me say that many times. I'm like, nope, never been
least
in the ring with
this. Least shocking thing ever.
That'll be our topic for next week's episode.
We can watch it after this episode wraps up.
Yeah. So we're going to do your homework and check it out, actually.
I will.
Okay. We do also have some listener questions before we wrap up here. As always, send us our questions to sandmanpod@gmail.com. Listener Steve P.
Hold on, Ty. Who are we looking for? Who's the guy that always... who's the guy that...
writes us in all the time?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Guy, all right,
Kevin from... we'll get
from Dayton?
He writes us a lot. He's a big fan. Shouts out to Kevin. He's a big fan of the show.
Kevin!
All right, I don't know if we have a question from him. We'll go to the first question I have here. Listener Steve P. from West Palm Beach, Florida writes in, I've heard you are a huge golf fan. Who would be in your dream foursome, living or dead?
My dream foursome would be me and Tiger Woods. Don't need anybody else.
Just you and Tiger?
No, anybody else would just irritate me.
Do you have a course picked out for you guys?
I don't know. Tiger.
Yeah, I'd play Arnold Palmer's in Orlando.
Okay, well, apparently Tiger does like his foursome, so he might want 2 other players.
You're not playing
waitress and you guys.
No, it's too. I can't play Augusta.
Okay.
It's too narrow, and I'd just be so old. I'd shoot 180.
Okay.
So Pebble Beach?
Dude, there's so much water. Well, there's six different courses, though, so some of them are more friendly.
Okay. All right.
There's seven different courses.
So Tiger, you and Tiger. All right. Listener K-Man from Mykonos writes in, if you had to perform one song for karaoke, what would it be?
I can answer for him.
Well, no, I don't want to know what he does, but what do you want to perform from the heart right now? What is it?
Wait. Do you mean me being able to make it sound good, or no, just doing anything? Song?
I don't think anybody sounds good singing karaoke. It's so all
about,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's all about, you know, it's all about the performance. It's about how much you're...
Something Michael Jackson.
Something, what, blame it on the boogie? What are you going to do?
I wouldn't do Beat It. Maybe like Billie Jean.
Billie Jean, okay.
Yeah, or
PYT. Thriller?
Yeah, PYT.
PYT, what a great song.
I thought you were going to go Bohemian Rhapsody. But
I was, because that's why I said, can I sound like fucking Freddie? Yeah.
And I don't think you can hit those high notes.
You know what I'm saying? That's why I asked you that question.
Okay.
Because I was going to say that.
All right. So that's a great one there. Shouts out to Michael Jackson.
Freddie Mercury just put his house up for sale that he owns since 1980. That came across my timeline today. And he had a bunch of like crazy stuff inside it.
Oh.
I just read that a couple hours ago.
Okay.
They probably found in there.
Who knows? Yeah, I hear that. Who knows? Listener Rory from Manchester, England writes in, if you had a time machine and could go back to any era of wrestling, who would you have wanted to work with that you never got the chance to?
All right, you're not going to like this, but it wouldn't, not in the way the question was asked. I would go back into the Roman Colosseum, the original place of professional wrestling, and I would fight Maximus.
Wow, he's calling out Maximus.
That's what I would do. That was pro wrestling. People think that those gladiators died every day. Those dudes were like pro wrestlers, dude.
Oh, these were work shoots.
Sometimes, yes, they brought the Christians in to kill with the animals and all that, but the gladiators were more showmen. It wasn't like this thumbs up, thumbs down, a gladiator died all the time. Those guys were worth something.
Oh, okay. Oh, I did not know that. So that's an interesting gladiator.
So that was that a great answer or what? Can't get a better answer honestly.
I was expecting Lou Fez.
Are you not entertained?
Superstar Billy Graham.
Yeah, no, he went Russell Crowe. Okay.
That'd be one hell of an entrance coming through the Coliseum with the beer.
Yes. They would have loved
it. Or wine, I guess it was back then. They didn't really have Budweiser.
No. Yeah, but he's right, though. I would have worked superstar in a cage.
Superstar in a cage.
And I would have kicked him out of it just like Bruno did at the Philadelphia Spectrum when I was there. Because the door was supposed to be locked. It wasn't locked. Superstar has the belt. They're in the cage. Obviously, first guy's feet to hit the floor. Bruno kicks him out of the cage, and Superstar keeps his belt because he was the first guy to hit the floor. But the cage door should have been locked. Dude, I was so pissed. I wanted Superstar Billy Graham to win, but I was pissed at the way it happened because the cage door is supposed to be locked.
That's interesting to me that as a kid, you were a Superstar Graham fan, even though Bruno was the babyface back then.
Yeah, Superstar Billy Graham was my first favorite wrestler.
Okay, so just because of the promos, the persona, the hair, everything about it. Best. I mean,
I mean, you know, Bruno's promos were like, bleh,
right.
You know?
He's more just traditional. Yeah. But Superstar Billy Graham really hooked
I'll him. Come and see you and fight.
Yeah, and Superstar Billy Graham's doing the Muhammad Ali show, pretty much. Cool. All right.
The pythons.
There you go.
Superstar was great.
Superstar in the Spectrum in a cage. That would be pretty wild. All right.
I love it.
Here we go. Listener Kevin from Dayton, Ohio asks, what wrestler or angle inspired you to want to try to become wrestler? You kind of just answered this. Was there any specific moment that made you go, damn, I want to try this?
I can't remember because I was so young. Dude, I'm 5 years old, so I can't remember the exact specific.
Okay, but you're saying Superstar Billy Graham was one of your favorites, though.
Yeah, but when I was 5 years old, I'm not sure that he was in WWWF that I was watching then. He probably wasn't in WWF until the mid-70s.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
So I probably wanted to be a wrestler before him, years before him.
Okay, but you just can't recall who... who right. it was at that time.
Nah.
And that was what? Just watch from watching on television?
Every Saturday afternoon, 1 o'clock and 5 o'clock.
Okay.
It's all the right. greatest watch, thing ever.
Watching every Saturday afternoon. Love it. Love
greatest
it.
Thing ever.
Well, as always, please send us in questions to sandmanpod@gmail.com. We definitely want to hear from you guys. And Hack, let's go to our cane of the week and toast of the week this week.
Dude, this is a tough one because I could go two ways with this. I could take... All right. You're not going to say, listen, people, I've been watching wrestling since I've been 5 years old. You're never going to see a better 20 minutes than The Rock just gave you last week. Dude, I got goosebumps. That song.
Smack your arm like he does.
All right, it
smack
was a, your arm it like was he does. A little long before he got to it. The song, dude. There's not many segments that I've ever seen that are that or that goddamn good.
Yeah, he's
dude. That's right up there with Stone Cold beating Vince McMahon over the head with a bedpan when Vince was in the hospital. That one was unbelievable yeah. too. You know what I mean?
So
that was right up there.
The segment this past Friday, I know we were all texting in our group chat, like. The way The Rock was able to command that 20-minute segment and go from, I'm here to entertain you and have fun, to then the switch that he did of cutting a serious heel promo on him was just incredible. And I'm like, if anything, what he's doing right now is totally overshadowing Roman because his work is so great that it's just it's like a black hole where it just everything gets sucked into it because he's so good and so powerful. I'm blown away by Rock's performance. The promos that he cuts on Friday, where it's like extended versions he puts out on social media, they're like 15, 10 minutes long. Go out of your way and watch those promos too because they are absolutely tremendous. I loved it too, Hack. I thought it was amazing.
You two feel the same way?
I watched it and I just couldn't stop smiling when I was because it's the definition of having them in the palm of your hand.
Yes.
I mean, wow. I was there.
Yeah.
I was there looking up out of his palm saying, feed me more, Rock. Feed me more.
And just the way he ended the promo with the what can I say ooh. Except you're welcome. The kids' movie line.
I didn't understand that, but apparently a lot of other people got it.
Yeah. Ty, I don't know.
Yeah, there's nothing more I can say. The Rock's as good as it gets, and he entertains me everything he does.
Yeah. All right, Hack, who's your cane of the week this week?
Say now, all right, this is easy too. Cody crying. Dude, if Rock is calling your people Cody crybabies, did he actually, what did he think cutting that promo?
It was before.
No, it was after because he called the crybabies things a couple weeks back, and now he's actually genuinely.
Oh, I thought you were talking about when he was talking about him actually. No, he's genuinely talking about crying.
This,
oh.
He's talking about the one on Raw that he cut with Michael Cole.
Dude, and to me, I think that had to be Cody's idea, and I think somebody had to be telling him, "No, you shouldn't be doing that."
Well, heck,
you're not getting sympathy, dude. You're not, and he tried to do the mother thing. No, no, no. It was totally misplayed, I think, that whole segment.
I disagree. I think it's classic babyface
stuff. It gives Rock fodder.
Good, fine. He's a clean-cut babyface. It fits his character. It doesn't...
I think I halfway agree with you, halfway don't agree with you, because honestly, at this point, that's really all Cody has, because that's like part of the story. And I don't know if they booked him into a corner because of that.
Yes, he's booked into a corner. Very good point.
You know what I'm saying?
Good point.
Like, that's all he's really got. But
very good point.
So, like, I don't know what else.
I didn't even think about it like that.
So, like, I don't know what else he can do. But I also agree with you that maybe he shouldn't do it. But I don't know what the alternative is. Like, where else are you going to. Where
else are you going to promo? I dare you bring my mother into this.
Right. Have some stones.
You know, have some balls. Don't pull into the crybaby who he's saying you are.
Especially after you just slapped The Rock in the face.
Right.
The week
exactly. And now you're going to bitch yourself and cry.
But it's genuine. It was horrible. It's genuine.
It's genuine bullshit. No, dude, no, I'm so glad he agrees. He agrees. Dude, I forgot about that point. You don't slap The Rock and then go cry.
All right,
you just don't do it.
You're entitled to your opinion.
If you're going to cut that promo, if you're going to cut the promo about your mom, do it right then in that segment. You know what I'm saying? I'll dare you. Oh, no, that's a... No, I'm wrong about that.
Well.
But, yeah, he shouldn't have cried. That was horrible.
I thought it gave him...
He did a good job of crying, though.
Well, I think it's real. I think he felt that. I think he felt it, you know?
He must have, because I half-assed believed it.
You know, I think he really...
It's hard to cry like that, like on
camera.
Yeah,
I think he really felt it.
Yeah, watching it made me want to cry.
It did?
He's saying because he didn't like it. He's saying because he didn't like it.
Yeah,
I thought it was a great segment. I look, Cody, obviously, I think he delivers as a baby face. Obviously, in 2024...
Yeah, sorry, Tosh, but you made a good point earlier that this is totally overshadowing the Roman match.
It is.
1,000... The night before, we beat so much more right now.
Yeah.
You know, and they can't have Cody not lose that tag match.
So if I just had to put on my,
you can't.
We could do a little fantasy booking here real quick. Obviously, I think Roman Rock win that night one, and The Rock's been talking about with this weight belt. I think The Rock beats him with the weight belt, gets his back all ripped up, and wins the match on night one. And then night two has all the gimmicks and everything with the interference, Solo, the Usos.
Then he gets screwed out of winning that belt.
No, he wins. He wins night two.
He ain't winning that belt.
Well, we can put $1 bet on there.
He ain't winning that belt.
I'll put $1 on Cody.
How is he winning that belt? Any way possible.
I still kind of think Roman's winning.
Oh, God.
Ty?
Roman.
Totally Roman.
3-1. I'm totally outnumbered here, but just like Cody, we're going to win night two of WrestleMania. All right, that's it for the show, guys. Please join us as always. Like, share, review, and send us your questions to sandmanpod@gmail.com. We will catch you next week where we're going over WCW Uncensored 1999.
Peace. Dayton, Ohio is my favorite place on the planet.
Take care.
Bye, Kev.